Provide you with a soundtrack to each morning as musically diverse as the city that this radio station is in. We invite you to come by and check out all the fun and, well, just a series of left turns. Every Wednesday, Thursday, and Friday morning from 10:30 a.m. to 1 p.m. It's long time running right here on KPFT. Houston.
We will control all that you see and hear.
This is Future Primitive, and you can hear us each and every late Saturday night, early Sunday morning on 90.1
FM. This is KPFT Houston.
KPFT Houston, People of Earth, is next.
Crying looking for you. I'm crying looking for you.
This is KPFT Community Radio, 90.1 FM in Houston, 89.5 in Galveston, 91.9 FM in Huntsville. Thank you for being with us tonight for People of Earth, Indigenous Radio that advocates for Indigenous peoples, communities, self-determination in honor of those who have gone before and the resilience of the Indigenous that is today very much alive.
From the land of shooting waters to the peaks of the Curdlane, thimbleberries in the forest, elk grazing on the plain, people of the Coyote made their camp along the streams of the Green Wallawa Valley when fences had no name. And they bred a strain of horses, the treasure of the tribe, who could toe dance on a ridge or gallop up a mountainside, who could haul the hunter's burden, turn a buffalo stampede. The horse that wore the spotted coat was born with matchless speed. Thunder rolling in the mountains, lead the people across the great divide. There's blood on the snow in the hills of Idaho, but the heart of the Appaloosa never died. In the winter came the crowned ones, near frozen in the cold, bringing firearms and spyglasses and a book that saves the soul. The people gave them welcome, nursed them till their strength returned, and studied the talking paper, its mysteries to learn. In the shadow of the mission sprang up farms and squatter towns. The plain was lined with fences, the plow blades split the ground. In the shallows of the clear water, gold glittered in the pan. Word would come from Washington, remove the Indian. Thunder rolling in the mountains, lead the people across the great divide. There's blood on the snow in the hills of Idaho, but the heart of the Appaloosa never died. The chief spoke to the people in his anger and his pain. I am no more Chief Joseph, Rolling Thunder is my name. They condemn us to a wasteland of barren soil and stone. We shall fight them if we must, but we will find another home. They fled into the Bitterroot, an army at their heels. They fought at White Bird Canyon, they fought at Misery Hill, till the colonel saw his strategy and sent the order down to kill the Appaloosa wherever it be found. Thunder rolling in the mountains, lead the people across the great divide. There's blood on the snow in the hills of Idaho, but the heart of the Appaloosa never dies. 1,200 miles, retreating three times over the divide. The horse, their only safety, their only ally. 3,000 Appaloosas perished with the tribe. The people and the horses dying side by side. Thunder rolling in the mountains said, my heart is sick and sad. Our children now are freezing, the old chiefs are dead. The hunger takes our spirit, our wounds are deep and sore. From where the sun now stands, I will fight no more. Thunder rolling in the mountains, lead the people across the great divide. There's blood on the snow in the hills of Idaho, but the heart of the Appaloosa never died. They were sent to Oklahoma. Malaria ran rife, but more died of broken hearts far from the land that gave them life. And the man once called Joseph at death was heard to say, we have given up our horses, they have gone away. But sometimes without warning, from a dull domestic herd, a spotted horse of spirit, wondrous, will emerge. Strong it is and fearless and nimble on a hill, listening for thunder, the Appaloosa's living still. Thunder rolling in the mountains, lead the people across the great divide. There's blood on the snow, but the heart of the Appaloosa never dies. Thunder rolling in the mountains, lead the people across the great divide. There's blood on the snow in the hills of Idaho, but the heart of the Appaloosa never dies.
That was Fred Small and his song, The Heart of the Appaloosa. Today I'm talking with T.J. Barber with the Oregon Wild Horse Organization, a national nonprofit dedicated to the protection and preservation of native wild horses, burros, and their habitats. She starts out talking about the years of legal challenges that the Oregon Wild Horse Organization and others have met in dealing with the U.S. Department of the Interior, Bureau of Land Management, or the BLM. President and founder, Teresa Barber of Oregon Wild Horse Organization. That's from Drain, great. Oregon. Drain, Oregon.
Yes, ma'am. So we're Central Oregon, and all of our Oregon horses are over on the east side. So it's a day's trip to get over there.
Yeah, I'm really grateful that you're here again.
Appreciate you having me on. We had something happen with one of our administrative appeals that had been sitting for over 6 years. They decided to say, hey, isn't this moot? One of the old cases that we filed when I was with Citizens Against Equine Slaughter came to light again, and it's the second one in a year that they've decided after they sat for over 6 years. When we filed these administrative appeals, we filed them with the Interior Board for Land Approvals. That's a legal step that we have to take before you can go to federal court. I call it the IBLA, the Interior Board for Land Appeals. And it's actually a branch of the Department of Interior, which is where the BLM also sits. So basically, you have a group of what they call administrative judges, and they aren't necessarily even judges, but they review the legalities that you bring up in the case that you're appealing. The BLM then also puts in their briefs and says, this is what we think about those allegations. The only time we really have ever gotten a ruling from those administrative judges is if the BLM decides and we're going to lose this case, so let's ask for a vacate. In other words, we're going to ask the court to basically nullify the decision that we made. You know, we're going to make it so as if it never happened. And then the case gets dismissed. The other time we actually get a decision is if we ask them for what's called a stay for a wild horse gather. We're saying we don't want you to do that gather until this whole case has been played out and the judge has actually made a decision. Those always get denied by the judges.
Can I ask you, what's a wild horse gather?
Okay, so when BLM writes up these plans, they say, okay, in this particular area, they're called herd management areas or HMAs. When they decide there's too many horses out there, they have to do an environmental assessment or an EA, and they have to prove that there's something besides the number of horses that causes an action to be necessary. And that action's always to go out and gather the horses. So that's what a wild horse gather is. A lot of our objection to that is they don't actually go out there and do an assessment of the environment. And they have a technical guide that they're supposed to follow to do those assessments. And almost every one of our cases, we're going, wait a minute, they didn't follow this guide. They didn't do what they were supposed to do to go out and do an assessment. These decisions really are made because they decide there's too many horses and they got to go. And they don't do the necessary steps to prove that those horses are excess and have to go, that because they're destroying the land or they're a public safety hazard. They don't prove those. What we're fighting is that BLM is not following that law. They're not following NEPA, which is the National Environmental Policy Act. That's the one that says that they cannot just say there's too many horses because of the number of horses. They have to prove there's some kind of land damage or the health of the horses is really detrimental because there's no water, no forage, or that they're a public safety hazard. There's so many, they're up in the highway or off of their HMA onto private property. They have to prove more than just there's too many. And so now once you've filed an appeal, you could then go straight to district court before a decision's made. But to go to district court, we have to have lawyers. We are attempting to do one case in Utah without attorneys. There's a group of four of us that filed and we're representing ourselves, and that's Utah for the Muddy Creek horses. It is extremely hard to do without a lawyer. Now, if you do it with a lawyer, the issue we have is the cost, of course. But when we get to these appeals, what happens is you file your appeal and then there's a series of briefs that go back and forth. So usually our first one is a stay because we don't want them to remove the horses. Once they remove them, they do things like castrating the males, and then also they'll adopt out the horses and sell them. So there's no way for those horses to be returned if the judge decides that BLM did make an error. So we want them to stop the gather until these court cases are decided or appeals are decided. And they always deny that. So the horses end up getting removed. And what's happened to us twice now is after the cases have sat in the administrative appeals process for 6 years, the IBLA sends out a letter to BLM and basically says, since the horses are gone, we can't provide these people any relief at all. So isn't this case moot? And when we look at an analogy of that, it would be like saying, I asked my neighbor to take care of my car or some other property, and your neighbor went and destroyed your car, had it scrapped, right? So you have to go to court and you try to get relief for that. And the judge says, well, the car is gone, so I can't give you any relief whatsoever. So the case is moot. And you could see, well, yeah, they could give you relief. They could decide that your neighbor broke the law and got rid of that car and stole your property. They could give you financial. So there are things they could do. But basically what they're saying is, let's sit and wait for 6 years and let your neighbor destroy the car. And then I'm just going to tell you, oh, sorry, it's been too long. There's nothing we can do. And what we're telling them, in one case that was already decided, we said, no, there were a lot of laws that were broken, and you still can rule on those laws. You can say, no, BLM, you can't not provide an actual assessment of the environment. You can't not do a current flyover or census to tell us how many horses are there. Those are things that you must do according to the law. And they could make those declaratory relief decisions for us. So they could give us some answers and some decisions and direct BLM to do things according to the law, but they're not. They're just dismissing these cases now. For us, you know, it's about 10 years that I've been doing these administrative appeals, and they're just throwing them out after they sat there all these years.
They wait them out, basically.
Yeah, they wait out the clock.
What happens during that wait time? What happens
nothing,
to the horses?
Absolutely nothing.
They don't touch the horses.
No, they do. They have already gathered them. So they go through the whole process of being gelded or castrated. They get sold and adopted out. Some of them die from the gather.
You could describe what a gather so people can understand. What I understand about gathers is that they're horrible. They're terrifying.
They are. Most of the time, BLM does their gathers using helicopters. And they stampede the horses to a trap. And then they use what's called a Judas horse, a domestic horse. And that horse will take off running down the chute to lead the wild herd that's coming in into the trap. A lot of times they run several little family bands in together. And those bands aren't together in the wild. So you've got lead stallions for each band. And those lead stallions will fight with other lead stallions that come in. They're all panicked and frantic, and, you know, they end up kicking and biting each other. Some of them try to go over the rails that they have set up for the trap site, and they'll break legs, they'll break their necks. It's horrible. And sometimes the foals that get run in get trampled. And so it's a horrible, awful, brutal situation. And then they load them in, they sort them out by age, so the foals get separated out eventually. And sometimes they're still, you know, nursing foals, and they're separated from their moms until they get to the holding facilities. And once they separate them out, they load them onto trailers. And again, you end up with panicked, frantic horses that have never been in a moving vehicle before, so you know, we get a lot of kicking and rearing up and a lot of injuries that end up happening in transport. And then they get to the holding pens. And at the holding pens, they're kept separated. And like I said, very quickly, they start castrating those stallions. Mm-hmm. And then the mares, they try to match them back up with their babies. So you'll have a pen that has mares that have foals. And then you'll have another pen that has mares that don't have foals. And another one that has these stallions, and supposedly they keep the stallions apart, but we have had situations where stallions fought in the holding pens and one got killed or injured badly enough that they put it down. So the whole situation is horrible for these horses. You know, they're torn away from not only their land, but also their families are all separated.
You're listening to KPFT in Houston. I'm Jacqueline Batiste. We're also 89.5 in Galveston and 99.1 in Huntsville. You're listening to TJ Barber, Protecting Wild Horses and the Roundup of Wild Horses. She is with the Oregon Wild Horse Organization.
It's a really rough situation for them. And then in the holding pen, any of the horses that they're going to put back out on the land, because they gather up as many as they can, and then they choose a few that are going to go back out for some gathers, not everyone. Some gathers, they figure they've missed enough horses, left enough out there that they don't have to put any more back out. It's messing with the genetics of these horses. We're seeing more and more inbreeding signs that causes things like club foot or blindness, you know, deformities that are happening because they're messing with their genetics and they are having that inbreeding issue.
You would think that people love horses. Is it that not enough people know what's going on out there? I mean, you're in the area where you would think people would appreciate these
people. Yeah, I mean, when we talk to people on the west side of Oregon, very frequently. They don't even know that we have horses in Eastern Oregon. And we find that in other states as well. These horses are out in such remote areas that most people don't know. And they are wild horses that are managed by the Bureau of Land Management and the Forest Service are only in 10 Western states. So nobody in the eastern part of the United States is really aware of these horses. There's very, very few people that know anything about them at all. And when you think about it, our country had 3 million horses back when, when it turned to 1900s, we had 3 million horses out there. Right now, our numbers estimate that we have about 60,000. And then that's sad. And so they're disappearing, and their genetics are being messed with. And BLM, when they remove horses, they make the herd so small that the genetics are in danger. And the way they claim that they fix that is by taking a horse from a different area that's similar to the horses they removed. And by similar, I mean it has the same physical look. It doesn't necessarily have similar genetics. In some of our cases, some of our herds had mostly Appaloosas, and they removed them all. And so when they put another horse out there, it may not even be Appaloosa. And BLM will say, well, there wasn't Appaloosas there. That's their excuse. But we know that one of the things that they've said they want to do, and this came from Rob Sharp. He used to work at Burns, Oregon's BLM, and now he's working in the national office. And what he said was that he wanted to homogenize all these herds. He wanted to make them all so that they kind of had the same genetics. And part of the reason we believe they're doing that is because some of the herds through the United States had very strong primitive markers. And you could see when you looked at them, like our Kyger horses, they're called Kyger Mustangs, but I have an issue with the word Mustang because I don't believe these horses came from the Spanish. I believe they were always here. They never went extinct. But those horses, they're smaller. They have really thick necks. They kind of have a squared head. They have a dorsal striper, a line that goes down their back that's black. They're usually lighter colored, what we call dun or silver dun horses, and they often have zebra striping on their legs. And you don't see that in domestic horses, and that's because they're not primitive, but they are mixing in horses that are what they call standard bred, saddlebred, quarter horse. And part of the reason they want to do that is because it makes the horses bigger, which makes them more desirable for people to adopt or buy. So they're just trying to get them out the door, and they want to get rid of those unique genetic pockets that we have that have those primitive genetics, because then people aren't going, hey, wait a minute, that herd has unique genetics. You have to protect them. And judges are more apt to say, yeah, if they have unique genetics, you can't just get rid of them. So it makes it harder for BLM in court if they have unique genetics. So they're just washing them all out. They want all of them to be the same, and they want to manage them like they're livestock, and they're not.
How is the Kyger doing at this time?
Well, that's the one that I filed an administrative appeal with three other organizations, and we decided we needed to take it to federal court because it was so egregious what they had done. We did manage to get that gather postponed through our lawyers once we went to federal court. Once we took it to federal court, we withdrew that appeal because you don't want two parallel legal cases going, because then if the IBLA judge said, oh no, they can do this, then you've got a federal court judge who's going, wait a minute, why did they say that this was okay and why should I rule differently? So you kind of take a risk if you've got two going. So we were able to withdraw it because we had satisfied that. We filed that appeal. So we went to federal court. We have excellent law firm. It's Green Fire out of Berkeley, California. We have managed to postpone the gather twice, once in 2024, once in 2025. And that 25 postponement was until July 2026 or until the judge made a ruling on the case, whichever came first. Now, BLM, since 2024, when we filed it, they have been stalling, even completing the record. The record means, and it's actually called an administrative record or an AR. What BLM is supposed to do is they're supposed to build that record while they're doing the environmental assessment, while they're making the decision. They're supposed to put all documents and studies and all of that stuff into a record that if the decision gets appealed, they can then provide right away to the judge. And in this case, we're now 17 months into the case, and they still haven't managed to provide all the records. One of the big records that we've been asking for are the records that they have that determined the population level for those Kiger horses. Kiger horses are on two HMAs. So it's the Kiger HMA and Riddle HMA.
Well, what does that mean, though, the HMA?
It's a herd management area. So it's the area of land where they manage that particular herd. And for the Kigers, the population numbers that they have set are so low that they're not genetically viable at all. And to be genetically viable, BLM's own geneticist claims that you have to have 150 breeding pairs of horses. The Kigers, when they remove to the low end of the population level that they have set, they would only leave 33 horses on one of those HMAs, and I believe it was 55 on the other one. Neither one of those is anywhere near 150 breeding pairs. So we're asking for the record that shows how they determined that those areas could only hold that number of horses. Because right now, according to BLM, there's somewhere between 600 and 800 horses that are out there. So how, and they're fat and they're healthy and there's plenty of grass, plenty of water. So how could they then turn around and tell us that the land can only support 33 or 55 horses? That doesn't make any sense. What we're asking for are those records that show us how they determined the number of horses that could be there. And at first they were saying it was in, you know, a Sausteen's management plan. And that just reaffirmed the number from a previous decision. Then they told us, oh, well, it was in this other decision. So we read that one. And that one only reaffirmed an even earlier decision. So what we're looking for is a decision that allegedly is where they originally set that population number way back in 1987. And now BLM saying, well, we don't have those records. We would have to go to the archives I think the National Archives is where they said they would have to get it. And the judge ordered them to do it. And my thought on that is, if you don't have that document, then how did you even review this AML to know that it's appropriate? How can you tell us that you've made that decision based on good information? You can't tell us that because you haven't even seen it. And I'm betting there's probably not many, if any, people in that entire office that actually worked there in 1987. So wouldn't they, if they were going to do what's right for these horses, wouldn't they at least question that? So that's what we're up against, you know, where we're going to be looking at another filing because they're going to decide they want to gather them in July. And we still haven't gotten even to the real issues of the case.
The next gathering of, in particular, Kiger horses will be July unless a judge says something before this July, which could be sooner then. And then another one of these terrible gathers can happen.
You're listening to People of Earth here on KPFT 90.1 FM, kpft.org. You're listening to TJ Barber with the Oregon Wild Horse Organization.
Yeah, and they would take those horses down to such a bad number. And, you know, the BLM particularly for the Kigers. They made a big deal out of how unique those horses were. They call them Spanish horses. And the reason I have an issue with that is because I am part Oneida, and I have talked to tribes all over the place, and a lot of the oral histories talk about horses being here well before white man was on this continent, well before the Spanish brought any horses here. So I have an issue with people calling them Mustangs. It's a Spanish word. And I don't believe they're Mustangs. I believe there are primitive wild horses. And what's interesting to me is the fossil studies that are being done have proven that the timeline that BLM claimed that they had gone extinct here is shorter and shorter and shorter. So I think eventually we're going to just prove they never went extinct. And the reason BLM doesn't want that is because if they're proven to be a native wildlife species, the protections for them are significantly greater. So they don't want us to prove that. And for me, it's upsetting that we don't have more tribal members screaming out, going, "Hey, wait a minute. This violates our treaties, our agreements, our sovereignty," because those wild horses were here. They were part of our culture, part of our lives, part of our history. When we do see that BLM says they consulted with a particular tribe for whatever area they're removing horses from, they're talking to tribal governments, right? They're not always in touch with their people. And that's what I'm finding with talking to actual tribal members, is the tribal members don't know that horses are being removed or don't know that their governments are saying, "Yeah, we don't care. We've got to start standing up, not just for our wild horses, but all of our wildlife. We are losing wildlife at an astounding rate right now. And if we don't do something about it, we're not going to have them anymore."
Well, can I ask you something about the type of people that they seem to be able to work with the BLM? Are they usually the same people that are doing these roundups because now that they've become somewhat proficient? So who are those people?
Usually it's the ranchers. There's a few ranchers that BLM uses to do the gathers, and they get contracts that, are upwards of $1 million or $1.5 million a year to go out and round up these horses and get them into the trailers and haul them to BLM. So
Are any horses being slaughtered for food at this time?
It's not legal to slaughter them for food in the United States.
Right.
So what happens, and what we are finding right now, is we're finding a lot more horses in what we call kill pens. And that's where somebody would take their horses and drop them off to what we call a kill buyer, or the kill buyer goes to auctions and buys them, or the adoption events that BLM has, and they'll buy them. Now, BLM is not supposed to sell them to anybody who intends to ship them to slaughter, but BLM basically turns their head. We have pointed out to them numerous times, "Hey, this person bought these horses." And in one case last year, there were two yearlings that were bought 29 days before they were listed on a kill pen site. 29 days. That person had no intent to take those horses home and train them and keep them and give them a good home. Was not his intent. His intent was to buy them for $25 to $125 from BLM and then ship them to this kill pen. And what's happening is you got a lot of well-meaning people who want to save these wild horses. So when they see one in the kill pens, they will buy them. And we're paying anywhere from, $800 to $1,000 is the average cost for those horses. So it's pretty lucrative for somebody to pick up some horses, drop them off at the kill pen, and make all that money from them.
Where
And then
are these kill pens at?
Kill pens are all over. The biggest ones that BLM is knowingly allowing horses to go through right now is Stroud, Oklahoma, Bowie, Texas. There's a place called Texas Panhandle, and they actually operate under two or three names. If they can't get advocates to purchase the horse at those high rates, then they are going to slaughter. They're shipping them down to Mexico. And when we call BLM, BLM says, well, we'll investigate, but they don't. And then they say, well, if we find it to be true, we'll put that buyer on a no adopt, no buy list. We don't know that that list even actually exists. And we do find repeat offenders quite often. So I don't think BLM operates in good faith. BLM could go after these people. These people sign a contract, whether they adopt or just outright buy a horse. They sign a contract that says that they don't intend to send them for slaughter or sell them to somebody who's going to, which would be dropping them off in a kill pen, right? What BLM told us was, those aren't kill pens. They're just helping rehome the horses. I can tell you, Stroud, Oklahoma, the title of their company, of their business, is Stroud, Oklahoma Kill Pen Horses. And when they list a horse on their websites, they will say, ships on such and such a date. And that ships on date is specifically the date that they will ship it to slaughter. So BLM saying they don't send horses to slaughter. They're not a kill pen. I mean, you're asking us not to believe our own eyes.
The slaughterhouses, or do they have to be in another country?
They have to be in another country, yeah. So the places that the United States ships horses for slaughter purposes is mostly Mexico, but also some go up to Canada. And actually, I think we've started putting them on ships now and sending them overseas, and which is a horrible thing to do. Because it's a very long trip in a very crowded place, and they get very, very ill. But we have started doing that as well. And I don't know a whole lot about that one, though.
Do you know when it started?
Well, it's always happened, but it's gotten significantly worse recently. We're seeing BLM, when they have horses in their own facilities, that's a short-term facility where they're preparing horses for adoption or sale or whatever. If they don't get sold or adopted, they'll put them in what's called long-term holding. And those places are usually on private property. Well, they're always on private property. And it's somebody that the government contracts with to take care of a certain number of horses, depending on, you know, the land and the contract that they have. And what happens then is, number one, the public's not allowed to go on private property. So we don't have access to those horses once they move to long-term holding. There's no records kept. We don't have access to any of it. So what we have always believed is that that's a way of laundering the horses and shipping them out the back door to slaughter. And right now, they're starting to close those long-term holdings. So we think that's why all of a sudden we're seeing more horses in these kill pens, is because they're shipping those horses that are coming from long-term holding places that are closing down. We warned about this before the presidential election, because Project 2025, that the big document that kind of outlined what was going to happen with the next Republican president, it actually had a section in there on the wild horses. And what they said in there was the plan was to kill all of the wild horses that had been removed from the wild that were in holding, so the government didn't have to spend the money to keep taking care of those horses. And we have roughly 80,000 horses that are off the land. We have more off the land than we do on the land now. We are very fearful that this closing the long-term holding pens and allowing these horses to go through these kill pens, we really believe that that's the way that they're going to enact Project 2025. They won't just go out and all of a sudden kill them all, because that would be a huge public outcry. It would be political suicide. So we think they're just doing it very quietly behind the scenes.
So are you saying that this kill may be going on?
Yes.
We just don't know about it.
And trying to obtain records is like pulling teeth from them. Even though we send FOIA records, a lot of times they don't answer them or they give you incomplete stuff. Like there's one holding facility, it's called Winnemucca. We asked for all the records for horses that were brought in during 1 year. And we asked for the current status that would let us know the location of those horses and, you know, whether or not they were still alive, because, you know, a lot of times they die in those holding pens. When we got it back, there were a couple particular days where huge numbers of horses left that holding facility. There was, I think, 150 a day for a couple of different days. And all it said on the record was departed. It didn't say where they went to or what happened to them or whether or not they were even still alive. It just said departed. And when we asked for more information, they said it's not available. So they are covering their tracks and they aren't letting people know. I do believe these horses coming from the long-term holding pens that are being closed are probably just being shipped off to slaughter. It's sickening. It's really sickening.
You're listening to People of Earth here on KPFT 90.1 FM, kpft.org. You're listening to TJ Barber with the Oregon Wild Horse Organization here on People of Earth.
Horses, horses, horses.
You mentioned Appaloosas. What's been their fate?
They removed either 845 or 856. We don't know because the records are inconsistent. They removed them in 2018 from Warm Springs in Oregon. And this is Warm Springs HMA, not the Warm Springs Res. And most of those horses were Appaloosas. When we brought that up in the appeal, BLM said, oh, there weren't Appaloosas there. Yet when we went to the holding facility, we found Appaloosas. And they were taken off the land. So what BLM did was they went on the webpage that they had for that particular HMA, and they took the statement off of there that said that those horses were mostly Appaloosas. They took it off. And what I had said to them is, do we know if these are horses that originally came from the Nez Perce? And they said, oh, no, they didn't have anything to do with it. They don't care about those horses. That's all they would tell us. And they're gone. They are gone. That's the one right now I'm in the middle of fighting for, because those horses, when they removed the over 800 horses, they were going to do a surgical experiment on the mares to spay them. And we fought that. And, you know, once they got to a law that they couldn't get around, that wouldn't allow those experiments, they asked the IBLA to vacate that decision, and the IBLA granted it. They granted the decision to vacate or nullify the decision that BLM had made to do that study, which also included the decision to remove over 800 horses. And so it left the horses in limbo, right? We tried to argue, Judge, don't vacate this because those horses have already been removed. So something needs to be decided about the fate of the horses. And the judge said, nah, and he vacated it. So then in 2019 and then again in 2020, BLM made decisions based them off of that EA that had been totally vacated, which is illegal. When they vacate a decision, it's supposed to be as if that decision was never made. So to base two more decisions off of that was illegal. And we caught the 2021. They didn't even notify us of the 2019, which also is a violation of law. So in 2020, I caught it, and they were making the decision that the horses that had been removed, and in the original plan, they were supposed to put 200 back out to do the study. So when the BLM realized, gee, we've got to do something about those 200, they started making these decisions saying, well, we decided that those horses are excess, that there's enough horses left out on the land, we don't have to put more out. So we argued in another appeal that the decision to call those horses excess was based on a vacated decision, which is illegal. You can't base it on something that never existed. So now that case has sat there since 2020, and all of a sudden the judge has gone, you probably don't have any more of those horses, right? So isn't this moot? And I just a few days ago responded to that and said, you know, whether or not they have horses is not the issue. We had a discrepancy in the number of horses. There's 21 horses that they had on the removal records that were not on the FOIA records, that you wouldn't tell us where they were at or what happened to them. Why is there a discrepancy of 21 horses? Where are those 21 horses? That's not been answered in the last 6 years. So the judge can order them to do that. He can order them to do a new census and see how many horses are out there, what the land is like, and what the land could truly hold, because their population level is under 200. But yet, in that 2018 decision, they said, well, we can put 200 out there to do the study. So if the land can hold 200 to do a study, then the land can hold 200. So we want a justification of why the population level is set so low if they can hold 200. So there are things that the judge can still make a decision on. But yet he's going, well, since BLM says that the horses are gone and the only ones left are castrated, and, you know, we wouldn't want to put out horses that are castrated. So, you know, we can't offer you any relief. Well, yes, you can. You can rule on all these other illegal things that they have done. And you can tell them, you can't do this anymore. That's what we're fighting against right now. And that's for those Warm Springs horses that were Appaloosas. And then in the Kiger case, I told you that's an ongoing federal district court case now. And in that case, we're getting ready to file another temporary restraining order or preliminary injunction to stop another gather while the case is being heard. And BLM is just dragging their feet. We just got word that they intend to file another motion for an extension of time just to complete the record. We haven't even gotten to the actual illegal issues of the case. Like in Kiger, when they were supposed to do that environmental assessment, they didn't. The environmental assessment that they relied on was 11 years old. The population number of horses that they claimed out there relied on a 7-year-old aerial survey. So they hadn't actually gone out and did a survey. Now, they did do a survey, but they did it during the public comment period where the public can say, hey, these are the illegal issues I see with your plan. They did it during the public comment. And then when they put their final decision out on that plan, they said, oh, well, we did a survey. Here's the number of horses. We don't have a chance to comment on that then. The comment period's over. So the only process you can take after that is to file an appeal and take it to federal court. So they tie your hands. There's no justice at all for us or for those horses. There's none. It's such a rigged system that there isn't any relief for any of us. And it's horrible. So, and most of it's because ranchers want their cows out there. They want every blade of grass for the cows. And we're seeing in some areas now where they're complaining that there's too many elk. So, you know, when the horses are gone, this is going to carry over to other wildlife. You know, we already see the ranchers wanting to change the Endangered Species Act and remove protections for grizzly bears and wolves and even mountain lions. They want more hunts. Anything that affects a cow or a sheep, they want gone. There's no more living with nature, living with wildlife, or respecting the things that they contribute to our ecosystems.
What would a movement look like? What would a resistance look like to save and protect what's left of the wild horse?
People have to start demanding that we get commercial interests, livestock, any mining or extractive companies off of our public lands. At least start there. With the livestock issue, we're also seeing that they want to remove old growth juniper. They chain it, they cut it down, And that affects the level of nitrogen that's stored. And, you know, so we're damaging the earth all the way around just to have cows or sheep. It's mostly cows out on those public lands. And if we could just get the commercial grazing, because it's not small mom pop ranches anymore, it's corporations. If we could get them off of our public lands, we could at least save some of these wild spaces. We could do less damage to the climate. Cows are huge methane producers, and people don't look at that as an issue. It is an issue. They belch and burp methane. They damage the land more than a horse because of their mouth structures, their foot structures. They're different than horses. And they also, even the way they digest their food, horses don't digest food very well. They don't have all those stomachs that cows have. So if they do eat, you know, native seeds, they disperse those seeds because they don't digest them. Their stomach doesn't destroy the seed. A cow's does. And the other thing is with the foot structure that I talked about, one of the problems for our fish right now, we're getting hotter and hotter summers. We're having more droughts. And a lot of these fish need deeper water that's cooler. And cows have a split toe hoof. So they have two toes. Horses have one hoof, one toe. So when they step down, they don't break up the soils like cows do. And when they're breaking up the soils, especially on the sides of a creek or a river, they're pushing that into the water itself. And they're causing the banks to be wider, which causes the water to be shallower, which causes the water to be warmer. And we're losing a lot of our fish species over that. And the other thing is a cow will stand in water and defecate. Horses don't typically do that. So they're putting all that pollutant into the water too. So cows are not good for our environment, and they're not meant to be in these areas in the West where it's desert. That's not where cows came from. They came from Asia. They came from a much more humid and wet climate. And now we've got the government saying our native wild horses, which I told you I believe to be native, don't belong here. But the cows do? And then we're also kicking them off a lot of areas in Nevada because of urban sprawl. They're trying to sell off lands, and a lot of times they're selling off lands that are dedicated for the purpose of managing their wild horses. And there's nothing that the government's doing right now to say, hey, wait, you can't sell that land. It has a purpose. Congress dedicated it in 1971 for the management of these wild horses. And so that's one of the things we're asking for. I've had talks with Senator Merkley, Senator Wyden, and my federal representative, Val Hoyle. I've had talks with all three of their office. We really need some legislation that tells the BLM that they cannot take these areas that were designated by the 1971 Wild Free Roaming Horses and Burros Act to be managed principally for these wild horses. You can't take those areas and sell them or trade them. So we're asking for that legislation because BLM is doing it all the time. You know, we're losing land. We're putting commercial interests first, and we're destroying habitats. So a movement would have to be that we have to get these commercial interests off our public lands, and we need to protect and restore the habitats and the environments for all wildlife out there, not just the horses, all of it. That 1971 Act that I talked about, that got passed largely because a woman who got known as Wild Horse Annie, her name was Velma Johnson, but she's known in history as Wild Horse Annie. She got a group of fourth graders from Roseburg, Oregon, to do a letter writing campaign to Congress. And that just caught fire. And kids from all over the nation were sending in letters saying, hey, we want you to protect these wild horses. Right now, I have a 12-year-old from Roseburg, Oregon, who is a bit of a music savant. He plays the keyboards. He will hear music in his head and just has to play it. And I heard one of his songs and I said, you know, I could see our wild horses kind of prancing to that. So he asked me for some photos of our Kyger horses. And with some of our great photographers, like the woman who runs a group, Save Our Wild Horses, we got him those photos and he put together a video with music that he composed himself. and wants to protect those Kyger wild horses. If people want to see it, his video is up. I believe it's on our KygerWildHorses.com. And if you go there, right now we're doing an auction that will help support that Kyger lawsuit so that we can finish it out. We were a small nonprofit run by all volunteers. I'd encourage people to go look at KygerWildHorses.com. And you can always look for Oregon Wild Horse Organization and find us too.
Running through the mountains, running through the rivers, running through the forest, horses, 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 running through the mountains, running through the rivers, running through the forest, horses, 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 horses. Sad na halen go, sote zin na halen go, ne jane go, ne jane go, ne jane go. Running like a prayer, running like a prayer to the sunrise. Ne jone go, ne jone go, ne jone go, ne jone go. Horses, 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 horses. Running through the mountains, running through the rivers, running through the forest, horses, 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 horses. Running through the mountains, running through the rivers, running through the forest, horses, 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 horses.
You're listening to People of Earth here on KPFT 90.1 FM, kpft.org. I'm Jacqueline Batiste. It's the end of People of Earth for this week. I hope you enjoyed listening to TJ talking about the fate of wild horses in America. And she's with the Oregon Wild Horse Organization. Thank you for being there. The music in the background is Eli Sicotte's Horses.
Running through the mountains, running through the rivers,
I'm crying looking for
running
you.
Through the forest.
Easy, boy.
Whoa, now, Rock.
Whoa, whoa, Rock. Whoa, whoa, whoa.
Hey now, KPFT listeners and members. KPFT turned 56 years old March 1st, and we're going to celebrate on March 29th with a crawfish boil. $75 is the cost of admission for one, $130 for two. Tickets are available at kpft.org or by calling 713-526-5738, option 1. Hope to see you out there as we pinch and peel. Your admission comes with unlimited crawfish, two drink tickets, and a heck of a good time.
And it ought to be a great day, I guarantee you.
See you out there, March 29th, Sunday, 1 to 5 p.m., 607 East Whitney. Get your tickets in advance. No tickets at the door. KPFT Houston.
90.1 KPFT.
Time to check in with the R&R show.
And Rock and Stu does a great job on our Facebook page.
Oh, yeah.
Because we are evermore adding new things to the Facebook page. And I'm still working on the daily feature, Musings and Deep Thoughts from Ronnie. I'm working on